Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on funeral directors and embalmers admit discharge of human prions into our public sewers right after this message. Hey, if you've got a 50 by 100 foot lot with 2,000 square feet in your house, you've got space on that lot for 6 raised beds that contain 2,400 square feet. Now, this is called French intensive culture. 2,400 square feet is enough space to grow all of the food that a family of 6 will eat in one entire year. And you can do it in the middle of the city just as easily as you can out in the country. The idea that you're trapped in the city and that you cannot provide for yourself and for your family because of a space limitation is simply a fiction. You don't need extra cash to buy a tractor, a plow, or a harrow. A shovel, a rake, and a hoe is more in line with what we need for an urban French intensive culture farm. And we don't need acres, combines, or price supports. We need pruners, newspaper for mulch, and open pollinated seed. Now, if you've got 2,400 square feet or a backyard big enough for a decent garden, you can feed your whole family on your own land. Now, my subsistence and survival school is designed to answer your questions with the most economical and practical solutions to bring your long-term food needs. And it's space-saving vegetables, so you need less land, less fertilizer, less water, less mulch, and less work. And it's designed with immediate food availability, only 28 days from seed to salad. And it has flowers to attract wild pollinators because of the loss of our honeybee population to chemical spreads and disease. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click on the email, and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. You've probably heard of mad cow disease. Mad cow disease, spongiform encephalopathy, they call it. It's called Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease or Creutzfeldt-Jacob disease in humans. Mad elk disease, mad deer disease. It's a wasting of the brain tissue. 13% of Alzheimer's patients have this Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease. In a study conducted by Columbia Medical School, they did autopsies on Alzheimer's patients and found that 13% of them were suffering from this brain wasting encephalopathy. Now, the average guy on the street doesn't know much about this disease, but let's take a look at it from the perspective of the funeral directors and embalmers, the people who have to handle these bodies after they've died. Here's this body to dispose of. When bodies have bubonic plague, AIDS, or other communicable or contagious diseases, how do the funeral homes and the funeral directors and embalmers protect themselves from these diseases, and how do they protect the public at large? Well, the following report details the dangers and the threats that morticians face from CJD and their procedures in dealing with those who have died from CJD or mad cow disease. Now, throughout the 130-plus years of modern embalming, funeral service has faced many infections and potentially fatal diseases and has still found ways to serve families and to protect the public health. We have survived the emergence of TB, polio, hepatitis, HIV, AIDS because we have formaldehyde and other embalming chemicals that effectively kill the bacteria and the viruses that cause these diseases. And we have learned to protect ourselves from infection during the embalming process. Now, as long as we never encounter an organism that is resistant to formaldehyde and other embalming chemicals, and as long as we have the means to protect ourselves, we will always be able to serve the public with our skills. But what if, just what if in the future an organism comes along that we cannot destroy through embalming? What do we do then? Well, the future is here now, and such a disease exists. There's no diagnostic test for this disease. You can have this disease for up to 25 years and not know it. There's no vaccine. There is no cure. There is no treatment. It is infectious. It is always fatal. Formaldehyde doesn't touch it. There are no embalming chemicals that will kill it. And common methods of disinfection and sterilization will not kill it. And we're flushing this pathogen down our sewers and into our waterways every day. It's called Creutzfeldt-Jacob's disease. Now, what is Creutzfeldt-Jacob disease? Well, Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, or CJD, is a one of a family of diseases known as transmissible spongiform encephalopathies, called TSEs, and it was first identified and described by both Creutzfeldt and Jakob in the 1920s. It is a fatal neurological disease associated with cannibalism in New Guinea. And there are also similar diseases among animals. In sheep and goats, it's called scrapie. In cows, it's called bovine spongiform encephalopathy, BSE, or mad cow disease. An outbreak of this disease in Great Britain in 1995 caused worldwide concern over whether or not this disease could be transferred from animal to human through the eating of contaminated meat or other animal products. So as a result, shipment of cattle or meat products into the United States was halted. No cases of BSE have been found in the United States, although one case was imported from Canada to Washington State earlier this year. A new variant of CJD called NV-CJD has been identified in Britain and has been proved to be associated with BSE. The new variant kills younger people, an average age 28 years old, and unlike the classic CJD, the incubation period appears to be months, about 7 to 24 months rather than years. 20 to 30 years for the old variant. Again, none of these cases have occurred in the United States as of this time. Well, who is it that gets CJD? Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease affects both men and women worldwide, usually between the ages of 50 and 75. But what causes it? Well, CJD results when abnormal protein accumulates in the brain cells. Scientists do not know what triggers the conversion of protein from the normal to the abnormal form, although a genetic defect has been identified that might provide a clue. Some believe the conversion is caused by a spontaneous mutation of the normal protein itself, while other scientists believe a virus or virus-like entity may be involved. This abnormal protein, believed to be the causative agent of CJD, is known as a prion. It's pronounced P-R-Y-O-N, prion, a protein-based molecule with no RNA or DNA that is similar and is smaller than a virus. Actually, because the prion disease we see today differs in many respects from the original description of CJD, some scientists question whether or not this disease we see today is indeed the same disease described by Creutzfeldt and Jakob some 70 years ago. So what are the symptoms of CJD? Well, the initial symptoms are subtle, and they can include insomnia, depression, confusion, personality and behavioral changes, strange physical sensations, balance and coordination disorders, loss of memory, and visual problems. Rapidly, the patient deteriorates with progressive dementia and usually myoclonus, involuntary irregular jerking motions. And as the disease progresses, it becomes more severe. Language, sight, muscular weakness, and coordination problems worsen. Now, the patient finally loses all mental and physical functions, coma follows, and then death. Death is usually due to pneumonia, precipitated by the bedridden unconscious state. The duration of CJD from the onset of symptoms to death is usually 1 year or less, most commonly 2 to 6 months. And just how common is this Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease? Well, the official mortality rate is approximately 1 death per million population worldwide per year. CJD is still classified as a rare disease, although the National Center for Infectious Diseases considers it an emerging infectious disease. And this figure appears to be understated because CJD is often misdiagnosed. Because of the dementia that it causes, it is often confused with Alzheimer's disease. Now, one study done by Yale University showed that 13% of Alzheimer's patients were found upon autopsy to actually have CJD. I think I reported earlier that was Columbia, it's Yale University. 13% of Alzheimer's patients, when they were autopsied, showed that they had Jakob's Creutzfeldt disease. Let me just do a little number here for you. It's estimated that about 3 million people in the United States have Alzheimer's disease today. They haven't died from it yet, but they have it. If these numbers are correct, we just times 0.13 and we have about 390,000 people in the United States who have Jakob's Creutzfeldt disease. Now, although officially we don't have any mad cow disease in the United States, that's because in this country we call mad cow disease Downer cow syndrome. Nothing has ever been done about the Downer cows. The routine process is very simple. We take the Downer cows, haul them off to the rendering plant, and render them. Then we feed them to the pigs, and then we turn around and take the pig offal and feed it to the cows. Now, these prions, or prions, are believed to be crystals, not actual living organisms, but rather crystals, kind of like a chemical poison. Only this chemical poison, these prions, caused this Jacobs-Creutzfeldt disease, the wasting away, the destruction of brain tissue. These prions cannot be destroyed by formaldehyde or even in a heated autoclave. You know, that's an autoclave is the machine that you put your surgical instruments into and heat them to 390 degrees to kill any bacteria or viruses on them. So what happens in an autopsy is akin to something that would come from outer space. The autopsy physician, the coroner, will dress up in a moon suit with steel gloves. They're called chain mesh gloves. And then he goes about this with a face mask to do this autopsy. These prions are so virulent, if that's the right word to use, they actually don't live. They're not living organisms. That's been established. We don't know what they are, but we do know what they aren't. They're not living organisms. They have no RNA or DNA. You can look at it in a microscope. You can see this thing. You can take it out of the brains of people that have this disease. And these prions are being flushed down the sewer. Now, here you are doing an autopsy, and this stuff is so virulent that you cannot use these instruments ever again. That's right. You see, normally a doctor has a scalpel. He cuts you open, cuts out your appendix, puts the scalpel into the autoclave, heats it to 390 degrees, kills the bacteria, and then does the next operation. You cannot do that with these prions on the scalpel because the heat doesn't kill them. And so the next patient that gets cut with the scalpel gets the prion that is on the scalpel and he spreads the disease. This is why the autopsy physicians dress up in these moon suits to conduct this autopsy. That is how deadly these prions are. In fact, most autopsy physicians, if they know that this patient or if they suspect this guy has got this disease, they won't do the autopsy. That's why so few people are being diagnosed with this Jacobs-Creutzfeldt, because nobody wants to get close to it. It's like some kind of a disease from outer space, like the Andromeda strain or something akin to it. And yet, we've created it here right on planet Earth. How we did that is still being debated among scientists. But now we're talking about how do you dispose of it. It can be created in the human body. Your human body, once infected with it, will replicate this prion. Create it, make a bunch of them in your body. And if they are left on some kind of an instrument, or if somebody eats it or ingests it, they run the risk of getting this prion disease, Jacobs-Creutzfeldt disease. That's quite a story, isn't it? Well, approximately 80% of the deaths were among persons age 60 or older. Among this age group, the death rate from CJD is 4.5 per million persons. And how is it diagnosed? Well, there's no definitive diagnostic test for CJD. The disease is suspected when a patient develops a rapid dementia and myoclonus. Now, a spinal test is 95% effective in supporting a clinical diagnosis of CJD. Unfortunately, the only 100% effective diagnostic tool available is an autopsy with appropriate tests. We have to wait till you die before we can really make sure. Now, the post-mortem finding of a coarse, spongy-like surface of the brain and the underlying microscopic cellular changes is characteristic of CJD, thus the term spongiform. Brain surface of CJD patient on autopsy showing sponge-like appearance. How long does it take for symptoms to develop? Well, a person can become infected with CJD and have no symptoms for typically 12 to 25 years, although the disease can run its course and result in death in less than 3 years from the time of infection. How do you get it? Well, three epidemiologic forms of CJD are well recognized. The familiar genetic form, 5 to 10% of cases, results from a genetic mutation. Approximately 1% of cases are iatrogenic, resulting from a medical procedure, including neurological procedures using contaminated instruments, corneal transplant from electrocephalographic electrodes, cadaveric dura matter grafts, and pituitary hormone administration. Sporadic CJD accounts for 80 to 85% of all cases, and these cases result from the mutation of the protein by some unknown cause. So, is it infectious? Well, stand by, and we'll talk about that when we return, right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. Now, our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. Now, that's correct, 90% population reduction over the next 50 years. Now, that's genocide on a scale that Hitler never dreamed of. Now, let's not delude ourselves into believing that we're going to stop all of these mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians in their insane scheme to enslave the world and impose a worldwide tyranny, a new world order upon all of us. But you and I do not have to participate in our own demise. We don't have to help them. We don't have to finance them, nor do we have to stand helplessly by and do nothing either. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, to learn more, why don't you just call and order my free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Remember, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. You can click onto the email. Send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org. Or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease, a little creature called a prion. It's actually not a creature. It doesn't live. It's been described more as being a crystal, and it's deadly. It is so deadly that in an autopsy, you have to dress in a moon suit, make sure you don't cut yourself. You can never use the instruments used in the autopsy for any other purpose other than autopsies. And once this thing gets on you, you can't get it off. So is it infectious? You bet it is. And although CJD was first described in the 1920s, it was not considered a transmissible disease until 1966. In 1974, a case of CJD transmission as a result of a corneal transplant was reported. In 1977, CJD transmission caused by silver electroencephalographic electrodes previously used in the brain of a person which had CJD was reported. The transmission occurred despite decontamination of the electrodes between patients. In 1985, there were a series of cases reported showing that cadaver-extracted pituitary human growth hormone could transmit CJD. Shortly thereafter, it was shown that human gonadotropin administered by injection could also transmit CJD from person to person. CJD was first reported in a recipient of a dura mater transplant. That was in 1987. And then the question arises, is CJD a danger to healthcare and mortuary staff? Well, as of today, over 24 cases of CJD exist among healthcare workers, including physicians, neurologists, pathologists, and laboratory technicians who have become exposed to CJD, and there are as yet no documented cases of transfer of the disease from a deceased patient to mortuary staff. However, the cause of 80 to 85% of the cases of CJD is unknown, and because it can take up to 25 years for symptoms of CJD to develop, it could be decades before we find out the true number of infections of CJD in healthcare workers exposed to patients with that disease. Now, what body fluids and organs are infectious? Since this is a neurological disease, the cerebrospinal fluid is highly infectious. The transmissible agent has also been shown to be present in the brain, spleen, liver, lymph nodes, lungs, spinal cord, kidneys, cornea, and lens, bone, and to a much lesser degree, blood. It's not found in tears, nasal mucus, saliva, urine, or feces. Therefore, there is little risk involved in becoming infected by casual contact or by living with a person with CJD. Now, can you get CJD from blood? That's the question being debated and researched at the present time. Although there have been no documented cases of CJD resulting from blood or blood transfusions, just consider the following. The Red Cross will not accept blood from a person with CJD symptoms or family history of CJD. A history of CJD disqualifies a patient from being an organ donor. Human CJD has been reported to have been transmitted to mice by the injection of infected blood from human patients into mouse brain. Studies of experimental CJD in guinea pigs and mice have shown that the infectious agent is present in the blood before clinical disease develops. Sufficient evidence of animal transmission suggests that the disease has the potential to be transmitted through blood. Human epidemiological evidence only indicates that if blood transmission occurs, it is likely rare. Cases have been found of CJD among persons who have received blood or blood transfusions, but the link between the disease and the transfusion has not been proven. 4 Australians have been reported with CJD following transfusions, however, and the source of the blood transfusions was undocumented. There is a recent report in the Western United States of 3 patients contracting CJD and dying after receiving a transfusion from a person who had CJD. This has not been clinically confirmed. Several cases of CJD following a blood component albumin transfusion have been reported. 2 cases have been confirmed to have come from a person who died of CJD. Now, the members of the Special Emphasis Panel on Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, have agreed that an unqualified and irreducible risk of exposure to CJD through blood and blood products does exist. Since there is no definitive direct evidence of infection from blood transfusions, there obviously can be no answer to whether or not CJD can be contracted by other blood contact. However, the absence of evidence is not evidence of the absence of transmission of CJD through blood. We simply do not know. So there is as yet no definitive answer to that question, but the evidence would suggest that extreme caution in exposure to blood is warranted. Is it airborne? Can you get CJD by breathing it? Well, the risk of infection from aerosols, droplets, and exposure to intact skin, gastric, and mucous membranes is not known. Nevertheless, the National Institutes of Health strongly cautions laboratory workers to avoid the generation of aerosols and droplets during the manipulation of tissues or fluids known or suspected to be contaminated with CJD. And CJD, is it hard to kill? The answer, yes. The organism is not destroyed by formaldehyde, phenol, alcohol, dry heat, boiling, hydrogen peroxide, ultraviolet radiation, or standard gravity sterilization. Think of that. There is no known way to kill it. God, it sounds more like the Andromeda strain the more we read, doesn't it? Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Well, the average American household making between $22,000 and $30,000 a year spends about 16% or $5,000 of its income on food. If the household is making, say, $40,000 to $60,000 a year, they'll spend about 10% or about $6,000 on food. Now, 12% of American households are now purchasing organic produce, or they buy from health food stores, organic produce salesmen, or farmers markets. Now, that translates into some 34 million people coast to coast and border to border. And already there are more than 4,000 small organic farms producing organic fruits, vegetables, and meats on 25 acres or less and making at least $100,000 a year serving this growing specialty market. And some of these farms are as small as 3 acres, and they're in every state in the union. Old Henry Kaiser summed it up nicely when he said of his business success, he said, find a need and fill it. Now here's a need that's just waiting to be filled. And the law school has a program to teach you how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. This is a 5-day school and includes lessons on marketing, business plans, growing organic foods, and law. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package? It's entertaining, it's informative. Remember, it's educational and it's free of charge, and you can order yours by simply calling 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Click on the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Jakob's Creutzfeldt disease. The only effective sterilization technique is steam pressure sterilization, a process not commonly available to most funeral homes. However, even this method is not foolproof. In 2001, a major hospital in Denver reported the exposure of CJD to 6 neurosurgery patients as a result of the use of CJD-contaminated surgical instruments after autoclaving. As a result, they have changed their procedure to include disposal of all surgical instruments used on a known or suspected CJD patient. Other medical centers are known to double autoclave these surgical instruments. Incineration is also effective, but obviously destroys equipment along with the organism. Now, the use of sodium hypochlorite, household bleach, is often mentioned as a potential disinfectant, but its results are inconsistent. It is highly corrosive to metal instruments, gives off irritating fumes, and cannot be used as an embalming agent. For maximum effectiveness, soaking for 2 hours is recommended. Wiping floors or countertops with bleach, therefore, would not produce this level of disinfection. Sodium hydroxide, known as lye, is also mentioned as a disinfectant, but also has shown inconsistent results and is also corrosive. In addition, it is a hazardous substance even by itself, which must be neutralized prior to disposal, thus raising OSHA and EPA concerns for handling and disposal. And finally, it deteriorates with age, so it loses whatever effectiveness it may have while in storage. Finally, it has been shown that the disease organism has long-term survivability, and it is still viable, and it can be transmitted after an inactive period of a year or more. Now let's take a look at embalming considerations. First of all, a basic review of some embalming fundamentals. Embalming is defined by the following 3 terms. They are disinfection, preservation, and restoration. A person who dies from CJD will not present any particular challenges to preservation. The selection of embalming fluid, fluid strength, and fluid volume will be the same as a similar body deceased from any other cause. Similarly, the appearance of the body will be no different than that of a similar body deceased from any other cause, and no special restorative techniques will be necessary. However, CJD is resistant to formaldehyde and every other embalming fluid component or disinfecting chemical, including clutaraldehyde, phenol, and alcohol. Nothing you can do with the body will render it disinfected. Therefore, by definition, you cannot embalm a person who has died from CJD. You can produce tissue firmness and preservation. You can produce a pleasant cosmetic effect, but you have not embalmed the body. When you have completed the arterial injection, the disease organism is just as much alive as it was when you began. And this raises the question of personal protection measures. While there are no industry-specific standards of protection for mortuary staff, when discussing CJD, we can emulate what is done in the medical field. Most pathology departments have additional guidelines for handling patients deceased from CJD. Typically, this includes wearing two or three pairs of disposable gloves, rubber or latex, never vinyl, protective eye covering and face shield, mask, cap, jumpsuit, waterproof apron, and shoe coverings. Hospital guidelines go beyond what is normally considered standard universal precautions when dealing with CJD. Avoid causing aerosol distribution of contaminants and avoid contact with all tissues and body fluids. All solid waste should be placed in a leak-proof container and disposed of by incineration. Instruments should be disinfected by autoclave or incinerated. They can also be containerized and disposed of as medical waste. All surfaces should be wiped with a sodium hypochlorite. Despite its shortcomings, the use of ordinary household bleach is recommended for general disinfective use in the embalming room and especially when dealing with CJD. Surfaces that may be contaminated should be wiped with a 5% solution of bleach, a 1 to 10 dilution. Now, since the organism has also been isolated in several internal organs, aspiration of the body should not be attempted. 40-minute pieces or minute pieces of the internal organs can be aspirated into the trocar, exposing the embalmer to the organism, and the trocar will remain contaminated after the process is completed. Now, like other diseases, we're going to be exposed to CJD unknowingly, but when we know or suspect the presence of CJD, we can take steps to protect ourselves. We cannot totally eliminate the risk of exposure to any disease, but when we know that its presence, then special care is warranted. Finally, you would be well advised to consult with local public health authorities prior to attempting preparation to see if special handling of the case is required. Now, most states and counties have regulations concerning the handling of infectious diseased bodies. Whether or not it is specifically named in the regulations, CJD is an infectious disease. There may be restrictions on shipping, public viewing, or other exposure to the general public. Now, some additional concerns following autopsy. The CJD organism is concentrated in the brain and spinal column, and while we might assume that exposure to the CJD organism is limited when handling the normal case, the embalmer is fully exposed to the organism when an autopsy has been performed. When death follows neurosurgery or when death is due to head trauma, the embalmer is well advised to request that the body be placed in a body pouch following autopsy to minimize contamination of the cot and removal vehicle or exposure of the removal personnel. If restoration of the remains is attempted, all instruments, the embalming table, embalming room, and embalming room personnel are exposed to the organism, and there are no procedures available that will guarantee rendering the organism harmless. The organism can remain viable for over a year. Now, limit the number of people who are exposed to the body by limiting admission to the preparation room during the preparation process. Exposure to others after the body has been repaired should also be limited. This would include other embalmers, hairdressers, and cosmetologists. What should be the final disposition? There have been no specific tests done to determine if the prion is destroyed during the cremation process. This has led some to speculate that the prion is some type of superbug that cannot be destroyed. Incineration has been shown to destroy the prion at 1,000 degrees. Therefore, it is reasonable to assume that cremation, which is also essentially incineration, also destroys the prion. Also, since the prion is normally destroyed during autoclaving, which is steam under pressure at 130-plus degrees, we can safely assume that the 1,660-plus degree crematory will also destroy it. Likewise, there have been no specific tests as to what happens to the prion when it is buried. Since we know that the prion can live for a year under normal conditions, there's no reason to believe that it can survive any longer than that underground. Assuming that the body remains intact inside the casket or casket and vault for at least a year, the interred body should pose no threat to the environment or underground water sources. Should preparation be attempted? Well, knowing what we now know about CJD, and probably more importantly, what we don't know, the question must be asked. Should an embalmer attempt to embalm a body with CJD? Some funeral directors that have been called on to serve a family where CJD is the cause of death have had this question answered for them. The family physician has already told the family that they cannot expect to have the body embalmed, have a public viewing, or a funeral. Some families have been told that the body should be cremated immediately upon death, and there's no reason for a family to feel obligated to choose cremation. By use of a body pouch and or a sealing-type casket, there's no reason why an unprepared body with CJD cannot have a public funeral and an earth burial. While we may not agree with the conclusion reached by the physician, we should at least note the seriousness that he attaches to this disease. Whether or not an embalmer agrees to prepare the body is a personal decision that should be weighed carefully. It's quite different from the questions we faced years ago when AIDS was first identified. Even though we did not know much about AIDS initially, we had an effective embalming technique and the chemicals available to render the body harmless if we were careful in our procedures. Now, while the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, has made AIDS a disability and requires embalmers to embalm AIDS cases or risk civil liability, the refusal to attempt to do what is impossible is an entirely different matter. And we're now dealing with something that's impossible. You can't embalm a body if it takes 1,000 degrees to incinerate it. Stand by. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, during World War II, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens and helped to provide their own food and fiber for themselves and their country. Well, today, over half the food that we eat is imported from outside of our borders. Our food is produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce, and it's nutritionally deficient. Now, Adolf Steinbrom of Fairbanks, Iowa, put this matter in perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. Now, when compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, Steinbrom's open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, and 205% more manganese. And the same result has also been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being in the first place. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies and how you can become independent from it, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now to order yours. It's 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to my website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email, send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Jacobs Crutchfeld disease and what's going on in the trade, that is the embalming trade. When you take that body to the funeral home, it's handled just like all other bodies, and the body fluids and other body parts are simply taken out, thrown in the garbage, or flushed down the sewer. And this highly toxic prion goes down the sewer and out into the public waterways to be consumed by fish and other animals, mammals, and birds, and God knows how it's then transmitted back to humans who might eat those fish, birds, or animals. We just don't know, but we do know this. We have a real problem on our hands. And since neither the Department of Justice nor the courts have ruled on the issue of handling CJD, a funeral home refusing to attempt preparation may indeed have to defend their decision if an ADA enforcement action is brought against it. The case will hinge on whether this risk of CJD can be eliminated by reasonable modifications to the embalming process. Since no embalming fluid exists that will render the prion harmless, it could be argued that there is no reasonable modification to be made. The threat of defending oneself from an ADA complaint must be weighed against the personal health risks involved. The other difference that we can note between the history of AIDS and the history of CJD is that within months of its discovery, we knew a lot about AIDS, what it was, how it was transmitted. But CJD was identified over 70 years ago, and we still know very little about it. Now, with CJD, the question of preparation can only be answered after carefully considering these facts and then weighing the consequences. First, we're being confronted with a 100% fatal disease. There is no cure. There is no treatment. There is no vaccine. The mode of transmission of this disease in humans is largely unknown. There's no effective embalming treatment. There's no effective disinfecting technique for instruments, equipment, or the preparation room itself. The organism can survive and remain viable for over a year, possibly infecting others during that time, and you may become infected with this disease and not know about it for up to 30 years. Now, it would appear that CJD is not a vicious, rampant killer organism intent on wiping the human race from the face of the planet. The numbers indicate something far less than a worldwide epidemic, to say the least, and there is no need for panic or hysteria. We're not facing Black Plague or Ebola. However, it is a fatal illness, and we cannot take that lightly, and it's not a disease that we can do much with, either by way of protective measures or embalming technique. Universal precautions coupled with cautions, deliberate work practices, and a dose of plain common sense will do much to reduce the exposure risk. But the risk cannot be eliminated, and the full extent of that risk is still unknown. So is it worth it? Well, how much risk are you willing to take? If you determine that the risk of infection is minimal in the normal case and attempt preparation, do you still refuse to attempt preparation of the autopsied case where the highly infectious brain, spinal column, and cerebrospinal fluid are exposed? Should you refuse to attempt preparation when there is no concrete evidence that you can be infected with CJD in the preparation process? And what happens if it is proven that there is no risk of CJD infection from a dead human body? What happens if it is proven that infection is possible? Well, if you refuse to prepare the body, will the family choose another funeral home? What effect would this refusal have on your reputation of service within the community? What liability might a funeral home face if they refuse to attempt preparation? What liability might your funeral home face if it is shown that an employee contracted CJD from a body that they prepared in your funeral home? What moral obligation do you have to protect your employees versus your moral obligation to serve the public? Although not specifically addressed by OSHA, the general duty clause of the Bloodborne Pathogen Standard would require the employee and the employer to protect employees from any known hazard. Since CJD is certainly a known hazard, employers would be required to protect their employees from this hazard. So it would appear that CJD would require steps beyond that of universal precautions. And indeed, the question is, can the employer adequately protect their employees from CJD if preparation is attempted? Well, some surgeons have refused to operate on a person known to be infected with CJD. Some pathologists have refused to perform an autopsy on a deceased patient who is known or suspected to harbor the CJD organism. Can you base your own decision on their decision? Indeed, the knowledgeable authorities within the medical community flatly advise against embalming, including the National CJD Surveillance Unit in the United Kingdom. And can you justify embalming a CJD case for what you charge, knowing that equipment may have to be destroyed after use and additional precautions must be taken, which might point out the fact that embalming any case might be worth a lot more than you might presently be charging? Now, these are questions that funeral home staff members should discuss prior to accepting a person deceased from CJD or suspected CJD. And would that also include Alzheimer's patients or Alzheimer's deaths? Because we now know that 13% of those are, in fact, CJD cases. The embalmer deserves to be fully informed about CJD before they make that decision. And that decision should be respected, and there should be no thought that there is a shirking of professional responsibility by electing not to attempt preparation of a body deceased from CJD. So in conclusion, ideally, there would be a definitive answer. Unfortunately, science has not yet provided that definitive answer. And ideally, there would be a protocol to follow that would protect the embalmer from this disease while facilitating the embalming process. But there is no protocol. Ideally, there would be a protocol to follow that would protect the embalmer from this disease while facilitating the embalming process. And ideally, we would have all of the answers. Unfortunately, such is not the case, and we simply do not have definitive answers to many of our questions. Even knowledgeable people within the funeral service industry have honest points of disagreement. Some see little risk, at least in the non-autopsied case. Some flatly refuse to touch a CJD case, autopsied or not. Now add to that the complications of OSHA, obligations to protect employees, and the Americans with Disabilities Act, the requirements to provide services as a public accommodation, and we can see that the situation becomes even more complicated. Too many in funeral service know nothing at all about CJD. Too many have never even heard of it. Some will attempt embalming only because that's what embalmers do. Anything less might appear cowardly, especially when the foe is unseen, such as a prion. Now that means that too many are going to be exposed to CJD without ever having considered the long-term effects of their decision to handle these cases or not. So while we may not have definitive answers, what we do have are cautions. What we do have are warnings, and someday we should have more. Someday this report will be outdated. Now, in conclusion, we ought to talk about this thing of quarantine. You know, God gave us a law in the scripture called quarantine. To give you an illustration as to how effective it is, the little country of Cuba, you know that communist enclave down in the Caribbean, they practice quarantine with AIDS patients, and Cuba has the lowest incidence of HIV/AIDS in the world, practicing that old biblical quarantine law. We Americans used to practice quarantine in the United States. In fact, quarantine is what ultimately disposed of such plagues as tuberculosis, communicable diseases that were spread from person to person. This prion is being spread from person to person. We don't have definitive answers, but we do know that CJD is communicable. People who ate meat from mad cows in Europe, in England, developed CJD. And when one patient is treated with the surgical instruments on another patient, we see a spread of CJD. When the prion is present, the people who conduct the autopsies wear moon suits to protect themselves. Should an embalmer do less than a pathologist handling the same dead body? You know, if the pathologists are so fearful, and if surgeons and other medical professionals are so cautious that they won't even touch the bodies, won't deal with them, why should funeral home personnel be any different? Are they less immune than is a pathologist who's dressed in a moon suit to protect himself? Would seem like to me that the embalmers ought to be dressed in moon suits as well. All right, we're about out of time. We'll have to cut it off right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. You've been listening to The Law, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week worldwide on the Internet. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, there's my signal. The time is up. We'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing. So until then, goodbye, friends.